Orb, Volume 2, Number 1, Editorship. Hello, welcome to The Orb. My name is Reed Hart. Like you, I spend a lot of time online. I am, however, old enough to know better. I remember a friend in the early 80s that had a 300 baud modem connected to a bulletin board. I remember when 1200 baud turned on the indicator that said high speed. For me, the internet came alive at about 14.4 kilobaud in about 1994. Now, of course, it's cable broadband at speeds I don't even think about. I can watch a stream of video or find a comic written back on May 29th of 1988. I can do these things without a thought. I remember a time when what I knew of the world came to me on the television, or radio, or a news magazine. Now, if I want to know something, I still have those, but I am much more likely to go online. I have news sites, Facebook, and of course Google to find anything I want. I read blogs. I get stories from friends over email. I have more news now than I could ever want. I know someone who played The Sims Social. Another put a nail through his tire. A third somehow broke Netflix. And another is chillin' before lunch while on holiday in Peru. I know more trivia about people I call friends than I could ever use. What do I really know? Where does it come from? Is it what I need to know?
She looked me over and I guess she thought I was all right. All right in the sort of a limited way for an off night. She said, don't I know you from the cinematographer's party? I said, who am I to blow against the wind? I know, I've said what I've said. We come and we go. That's the thing that I keep in the back of my head. I know, I've said what I've said. We come and we go. That's the thing that I keep in the back of my head. About you that really reminds me of money. She was the kind of girl that could say things that weren't that funny. I said, what does that mean? I really remind you of money. She said, oh, who am I to blow against the wind? I know, I've seen what I've said. We come and we go. That's the thing that I keep in the back of my head. I know, I've seen what I've said. We come and we go. That's the thing that I keep. She moved so easily, all I could think of was sunlight. I said, aren't you the woman who was recently given a Fulbright? She said, don't I know you from the cinematographer's party? I said, who am I to blow against the wind? I know, I've seen what I've said. We come and we go. That's the thing that I do in the back of my head. I know, I've seen what I've said. I know what I know.
People had been getting along for millennia without knowing what was happening in the next county, let alone a country on the other side of the world. Along came the newspaper, which could tell you stories from faraway places that had arrived by mail. Then along came the telegraph, that could tell you the story without the need for all that travel. The pace of change quickened, and our interest in the lives of others grew. Radio allowed us to hear the words from people far, far away, as they were being spoken. Television made their every move our entertainment. Everyone had news programs. Getting the news live and direct turned into a 24-hour event. First it was CNN, then pretty much everyone. Although not real news, this does exemplify the situation.
In a desperate attempt to fill 24 hours of programming, here's some bullshit that happened somewhere today. We've got some footage here of the bullshit which began just after 3 o'clock this afternoon when residents in this neighborhood were shocked to see this fairly common thing happening. An attractive witness described the event in breathless terms.
I went to my window and I was like, whoa, there's some bullshit happening.
That happened right over there. I'm an older man, so you can trust what I say.
Authorities in special uniforms rushed to the scene to stand around while our cameras filmed them. Our reporter Keith Collins joins us now live from the scene of the bullshit through the use of expensive technology. Good to be with you again, Keith. We have a colorful graphic here that shows instances of bullshit like this are on the rise. Is that right?
Yes, although why is unclear. Some say it's because of one fucking reason. Others say it's because of some other fucking reason. I talked to this random expert on the subject who told me this thing you're about to hear him say right after he points at a piece of paper.
I spent my entire life attending the nation's most prestigious schools to talk about bullshit like this. I'm really just happy to be on TV.
Now let's see if we can drag this out a little longer by showing emails written by some of our viewers. I once saw some stuff kind of like the shit you're talking about happen. I have nothing more to add. Another person says, I am angry that things like this happen. I get mad about every bullshit thing I see. So obviously a lot of opinions there to make this story seem somewhat meaningful.
Oh, absolutely, Glenn. This bullshit has some broader implications. Here's a list of tips on how to avoid bullshit happening to you.
And here's some footage of Congress.
Yes, I see that.
Well, thank you, Keith. Let us know if there are any updates on this bullshit story from there.
There's no way there will be.
Very good. We'll check back with you in an hour anyway.
I'm just some fucking guy.
When we return, we'll look at live footage of a car chase taken from a helicopter and free associate about what's going on.
Coverage deteriorated. News was less newsy. With 24 hours to fill, opinion started to take its place. Along the way, we started to lose our faith in the veracity of what we heard and saw. Seeing was no longer believing. We've all seen movies with computer effects. We've seen buildings explode, the earth rent asunder. We've seen ships sink and alien life. We simply don't believe it when someone shows us something unexpected. Where could we get the real story? Ah, yes, the internet, the great democratizing force of the earth. Everyone can post citizen news and can see what's happening, raw and unfiltered. Only not so fast. We're now getting to the meat of it. Where do we place our trust? With all those sources, including web versions of the very ones that we don't trust to start with, which ones are worth following? Okay, let's wind things back a bit. There was a time when the news was a local paper. They cared about what happened. The editor considered his opinions carefully before weighing in on an issue, because his voice spoke with an authority that came from years of experience filtering the news. It was the editor's skill that selected the stories and photos that appeared in the paper. Editing was not an easy task. The voice had to include some local color, some regional coverage, enough of the national picture to enable us to talk intelligently about our national affairs. Some foreign stories were included so that we could stay in touch with the world, too. The editor's selections became community conversation. The importance of a well-read, well-informed citizenry cannot be overstated. Democracy requires a public that knows the truth about the scandal in Europe, as well as the position of the mayor on the new factory. To make intelligent decisions at the poll, we need to know what is what and who is who, thanks to the editor. Now we find everyone's voice is equal. On the internet, that fat guy in his mom's basement can appear as well-informed as the academic who made the issue his life's work. Except he isn't. What happened? How did we go from investing our trust in a local editor to simply shopping around the net for an opinion we agree with? More importantly, how did we get into a situation where we claim to be well-informed without any evidence that we actually are? News has degraded to the point of being little more than reading press releases from this or that group or company. Editors, the ones who used to pick the stories to ensure we had a well-informed population, have become something much less. Democracy has paid a price. What happened? Money. Remember those old stories of editors chasing down a story of corrupt developers and murder? They could not be bought. Now, the news is just another program that has to deliver an audience to advertisers. Keeping a large staff of reporters isn't necessary to find content. Just read the press releases. Forgive a quick break here while I pitch The Orb's home, orbcast.ca. I expect many listeners pick the show up through iTunes and may not know where to find us. The Orb is exclusively listener-supported and could really use some help. Please stop by orbcast.ca and join in. We offer a range of content to subscribers, including access to the complete catalog, transcripts of episodes, links to references, and participation in the forum. There's even a section of Jetsam, the ideas and bits that didn't make it into each episode. If you have a topic you would like The Orb to focus on, please send an email to suggestions@orbcast.ca. Editorship is the picking and choosing of the content of our lives. It happens at several levels, much of it our own, but much of it from outside. I really think it is something we don't consider carefully enough. I'd like you to consider a photograph in an audio podcast. I know I'm getting dangerously close to the territory of dancing about architecture, but bear with me. If you drop by orbcast.ca, you can see the photo on the page for this episode. The picture I want to talk about appears in David Friend's book on 9/11 titled Watching the World Change. The photo is by Thomas Hopker, who held it under wraps for 4 years. It shows five young friends on the waterfront in Brooklyn, taking what seems to be a lunch or bike riding break, enjoying the radiant late summer sun, and chatting away as cascades of smoke engulf Lower Manhattan in the background. Mr. Hopker found his subjects troubling. They were totally relaxed like any normal afternoon, he told Mr. Friend. It's possible they lost people and cared, but they were not stirred by it. The photographer withheld the picture from publication because we didn't need to see that then, he feared. It would stir the wrong emotions. But over time, with perspective, he discovered it grew in importance. Frank Rich, from a column he wrote in the New York Times, said, "What he caught was this. Traumatic as the attack on America was, 9/11 would recede quickly for many. This is a country that likes to move on, and fast. The young people in Mr. Hopker's photo aren't necessarily callous, they're just American." What really happened? According to Walter Sipser, one of those in the photograph, quote, "Thomas Hopker took a photograph of my girlfriend and me sitting and talking with strangers against the backdrop of the smoking ruin of the World Trade Center on September 11th. Earlier, she and I had watched the buildings collapse from my rooftop in Brooklyn, and we made our way down to the waterfront. The Williamsburg Bridge was filled with hundreds of people, covered in dust, helping one another make their way onto the street. It was clear that people who ordinarily would not have spoken two words to each other were suddenly bound together, which I suppose must be a fairly common occurrence in the aftermath of a catastrophe." Unquote. So the photo is not what Frank Rich assumed, the callousness of Americans getting on with life. It is of Americans coming together to talk about something catastrophic happening across the river. The editor is the one who is supposed to sort that stuff out. The editor must decide, if the understanding of the story is clear from the image. If not, then don't print it. Hopker's first instincts were right. He should not have released the image. Remember, you can't unsee things.
I need a camera to my eye, to my eye, reminding which lies that I am hiding. The shackles belong.
With the internet, we have to do our own editing. We have to select stories that are well-sourced, well-written, and cover a range of issues. This is not as easy as it once was. Even the internet is taking on some editing of its own. This is from a TED Talk by Eli Pariser from February 2011.
When I was growing up in a really rural area in Maine, you know, the internet meant something very different to me. It meant a connection to the world. It meant something that would connect us all together. And I was sure that it was going to be great for democracy and for our society. But there's this kind of shift in how information is flowing online. And it's invisible. And if we don't pay attention to it, it could be a real problem. So I first noticed this in a place I spend a lot of time, my Facebook page. I'm progressive politically, big surprise, but I've always gone out of my way to meet conservatives. I like hearing what they're thinking about. I like seeing what they link to. I like learning a thing or two. And so I was kind of surprised when I noticed one day that the conservatives had disappeared from my Facebook feed. And what it turned out was going on was that Facebook was looking at which links I clicked on. And it was noticing that actually I was clicking more on my liberal friends' links than on my conservative friends' links. And without consulting me about it, it had edited them out. They disappeared. So Facebook isn't the only place that's doing this kind of invisible algorithmic editing of the web. Google's doing it too. If I search for something and you search for something, even right now at the very same time, we may get very different search results. Even if you're logged out, one engineer told me, there are 57 signals that Google looks at. Everything from what kind of computer you're on, to what kind of browser you're using, to where you're located. that it uses to personally tailor your query results. Think about it for a second. There is no standard Google anymore. And you know, the funny thing about this is that it's hard to see. You can't see how different your search results are from anyone else's. But a couple of weeks ago, I asked a bunch of friends to Google Egypt and to send me screenshots of what they got. When you put them side by side, you don't even have to read the links to see how different these two pages are. But when you do read the links, it's really quite remarkable. Daniel didn't get anything about the protests in Egypt at all in his first page of Google results. Scott's results were full of them. And this was the big story of the day at that time. That's how different these results are becoming. So it's not just Google and Facebook either. You know, this is something that's sweeping the web. There are a whole host of companies that are doing this kind of personalization. Yahoo News, the biggest news site on the internet, is now personalized. Different people get different things. Huffington Post, Washington Post, New York Times, all flirting with personalization in various ways. And where this moves us very quickly toward a world in which the internet is showing us what it thinks we want to see, but not necessarily what we need to see.
Just as the media have succumbed to delivering an audience to advertisers, the internet is doing the same. It wants to keep your eyeballs on whatever they're on. It wants to send you the ads that are of interest to you. It wants to deliver the stories you've been looking for. It does this by hiding the ones it thinks you don't want.
So what this suggests is actually that we may have the story about the internet wrong. In a broadcast society, you know, this is how the founding mythology goes, right? In a broadcast society, there were these gatekeepers, the editors, and they controlled the flows of information. And along came the internet, and it swept them out of the way, and it allowed us, all of us, to connect together, and it was awesome. But that's not actually what's happening right now. What we're seeing is more of a passing of the torch from human gatekeepers to algorithmic ones. And the thing is that the algorithms don't yet have the kind of embedded ethics that the editors did. So if algorithms are going to curate the world for us, if they're going to decide what we get to see and what we don't get to see, then we need to make sure that they're not just keyed to relevance. We need to make sure that they also show us things that are uncomfortable or challenging or important. This is what TED does, right? Other points of view.
Those other points of view are out there. We need them. We need to consider whether people should get medically necessary treatment and whether the pensions being granted to public workers are fair. We need to consider whether we want that big box store in our neighborhood or whether it brings with it practices in China that would make you want to curl up and die. Our politics surround us. We need to surround ourselves with the best information available and with connections to our neighbors, whether next door or around the globe.
We really need the internet to be that thing that we all dreamed of it being. We need it to connect us all together. We need it to introduce us to new ideas and new people and different perspectives. And it's not going to do that if it leaves us all isolated in a web of one.
Mark Zuckerberg was once asked by a journalist about the importance of the news feed on Facebook. He responded that a squirrel dying in front of your house may be more relevant to your interests right now than people dying in Africa. I can see that both may have political importance. The local story may be related to something they sprayed on your lawn earlier that day. Who knows? If, on the other hand, the death of the squirrel was one of nature's day-to-day events, then it's time for some editorship. Personally, I would post the former, not the latter. Sadly, most people don't bother to judge. Because they don't judge, most readers don't either. The death of the squirrel was just an event. We have created a world where people post the most mundane as readily as they post the most profound. Our lives are filled with the mundane. The profound comes along only occasionally. Please bring back editorship. Please practice a little critical thinking before you post. Please practice critical thinking whenever you read or listen or watch. Thank you. Yorb is a listener-supported presentation of Cornoble Productions. New podcasts are released alternate Mondays at orbcast.ca or pick us up at iTunes. I'm Reed Hart.